Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer. SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting.
Than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience.
With Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Why have we asked our contractor we found on Angie.com to be our kid's legal guardian? Because he took such good care when redoing our basement that we knew we could trust him to care for our kids, all 8 of them, should something happen to us.
Are you my dad now?
No, sorry, I do basements.
Connecting homeowners with skilled pros for over 30 years. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
Hey parents, we all know summer break is for fun, but it's also a time when kids can start losing some of the progress they made during the school year. We want them to stay engaged and keep those young minds active. Between camps, vacations, and family time, it can be tough to keep a learning routine going. That's why I want to tell you about IXL. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts, from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL offers personalized interactive learning that adapts to each child's level and pace. It's an easy way to keep learning going through the summer and helps kids feel confident heading into the next school year. Studies show kids who use IXL score higher on tests, proven in all 50 states. And get this, IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. That's a huge endorsement. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
The Week in Philly on KYW News Radio is recorded and edited every Friday afternoon. For the latest updates to any of the stories you're about to hear, listen to KYW News Radio anytime on your smart speaker or the Odyssey or iHeartRadio apps. Visit KYW News Radio. Or follow us on social media at KYW News Radio.
This is The Week in Philly from KYW News Radio. Sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
Welcome to our weekly look at the stories that have been making headlines in Philadelphia and the region. My name is Matt Leon, and over the next hour, we will bring in KYW News Radio reporters to break down the stories you have been talking about. Continued fallout after 15 people were arrested at a Pride Festival in Philadelphia last weekend.
There was this heavy police presence, and critics say that they took a heavy-handed approach that really wasn't necessary.
Tim Jimenez will have the details. District Attorney Larry Krasner makes a very public plea to the mayor for more money for his office.
Mayor Parker called it theater.
Pat Loeb will have that story. Then we will bring in Mike DiNardo to look back at the school year in Philadelphia, which wrapped up on Thursday.
The facilities plan has to be the story of the year.
Then Kristen Johansson will tell us about the trial of a man charged with killing 4 people, including his mother.
They convicted him on all charges, which included 4 counts of first-degree murder.
Some movement in the Pennsylvania legislature to ban so-called forever chemicals.
The vote passed 188-13, clearly strong bipartisan support.
Jim Melwert will have that story. And then Justin Udo will warn us to be on the lookout for World Cup ticket scams.
This makes up nearly 70% of the ticket sale frauds that they're seeing.
All that is ahead over the next hour. I hope you'll join us for The Week in Philly from KYW News Radio. And we will get started right after this. We start this edition of The Week in Philly with fallout from Pride celebrations on Sunday when 15 people were arrested. Now, police say they were doing their job. Members of the LGBTQ community say police took things too far and were overly aggressive. For more, let's bring in KYW's Tim Jimenez. And Tim, first give us the backstory. Fill in the gaps here. What happened on Sunday?
Yeah, Matt, this was the annual Pride Festival in March that was taking place on the Ben Franklin Parkway. Now, the location, that is a departure from previous years when the event was held mainly within the gayborhood in Center City. The decision was made to move it to the Parkway because the celebrations have gotten bigger and bigger every year, and organizers say more space was needed to accommodate the crowd safely. Now, by most accounts, things went pretty well on the Parkway, but the crowds were forming in the gayborhood even while the celebrations were still happening on the Parkway. So you essentially had police trying to handle two large gatherings at once in different locations. At some point, it became too much in the gayborhood. Police Commissioner Kevin Bethel says there was fighting, unruly behavior, and people were blocking the streets. So what the police decided to do was clear parts of the area. So there was this heavy police presence, and critics say that they took a heavy-handed approach that really wasn't necessary, Matt.
The way that they police our community on days of celebration is different from the way that they police other communities when they're celebrating.
Mentioned 15 arrests. What were the arrests for? What were the charges?
Of the 15 people arrested, 14 were for disorderly conduct, according to police. And then you had one person arrested for aggravated assault on a police officer. Philly PD says there could be more charges filed as they continue their investigation.
You talked about members of the community felt police were heavy-handed. Like, what were the main concerns? Were there specific incidents, or was it just kind of an overall way they felt about how the situation was handled?
I'd say a combination of both, Matt. You have members of the LGBTQ community saying that the police department went way too far, that they took what looked like to many who were there to be this militarized approach to crowd control. There's cell phone video that's been making the rounds on social media of officers picking up their bikes, using them to move people away physically. In one video, it looks like a bunch of cops are grabbing one person, trying to get that person under control and arresting them outside the bar Woody's. Rue Landau, the first openly LGBTQ member of city council, put out a statement saying many in the community have reached out to her office expressing outrage. In the statement she put out, she said, quote, "Police brutality has no place at Pride." And she contacted police and other city departments to talk about what happened and the tactics that police were using.
And what do police have to say about what happened?
Police Commissioner Kevin Bethel put out this lengthy statement saying that the decision to clear out part of the area was not because people were celebrating Pride. He wanted to emphasize that. He says they have long supported Pride, but because of public safety issues, that's why they had to do crowd control the way they did. But Bethel says they are taking concerns from the LGBTQ community really seriously, and they're doing a full after-action review.
And you mentioned Rue Landau. Has the city had any other comment, any other officials?
Mayor Sherelle Parker put out a statement, Matt, saying that the administration was also taking the concerns from the LGBTQ community really seriously. She says she met with Commissioner Bethel and other top officials in her administration to discuss their response. She planned on meeting with community members as well and promised accountability.
And as an aside, in the stories reading up on this, it sounds like some people said officers were wearing face coverings. Do we know what that was all about?
You can see in some of the cell phone video, Matt, that yes, there were some officers covering their faces, about a handful or so out of the hundreds who were responding to Pride celebrations. All that information, according to Commissioner Bethel. And he said, quote, "Those officers should not have been wearing masks while performing these duties." And that is part of the department policy that is unrelated to the ICE out legislation that City Council passed regarding ICE agents covering their faces. Commissioner Bethel says this has long been a policy of the department for officers to not cover up their faces in such a manner, and that police are saying that they're going to review what exactly happened when it comes to those face coverings and what action to potentially take. All of that is under the full investigation that's happening.
All right. Thank you very much, Tim. That's KYW's Tim Jimenez joining us. Just getting started on this edition of The Week in Philly. Much more to come right after this.
Madam Mayor Sherelle Parker, greetings.
I don't have a role in his play, so maybe it's a one-man show.
If the outcome does not satisfy my oath, then I have to make another effort.
He has a right to say whatever he wants, but I will not play a role in his theater.
This is The Week in Philly, and on Monday, District Attorney Larry Krasner hand-delivered a letter to Mayor Sherelle Parker asking for more money for his office. Now, it is not unusual for someone to be looking for more funding for their department, but as we bring in KYW City Hall Bureau Chief Pat Loeb, Pat, this method was a bit unique, no?
Yes, it was a bit dramatic. And in fact, Mayor Parker called it theater. She also pointed out that the DA's office has gotten a budget increase every year since 2021, amounting to a 55% increase just in the last 5 years. She said she wouldn't be participating in what she called his stunting. She said it was a one-man show.
I'm curious, like, could this be about more than just money for the DA's office? Because when you combine this with how Larry Krasner released that video calling for the resignation of Philadelphia Democratic Party Chair Bob Brady the day after progressive Chris Rabb won the 3rd Congressional District primary, it's just interesting. And I feel like there might be something more there.
Yes, I think a lot of people wondered if this was more about politics than budgets. There's been a rumor that the DA intends to run against Mayor Parker in next year's primary. And those rumors did start after Chris Rabb defeated more moderate candidates in the congressional primary, which perhaps signaled this is a good time for more progressive candidates. So I asked the DA if he, in fact, intended to run against her. And he said,
I have no intention. I have no plan to run against anybody.
Well, we'll keep an eye on it. Now, also this week, you did a story that Philadelphia is being investigated by the Trump administration over guns. What's going on?
Right. Well, you know, Pennsylvania is an open carry state, but as with a lot of state laws, cities of the first class, i.e. Philadelphia, are exempted. In Philadelphia, you need a permit to carry a gun, and those permits can be revoked for a number of things. Domestic violence conviction, felony conviction, being committed or found mentally incompetent. And under police department policy, there's a provision for revoking a permit from someone with a character or reputation that suggests they're a danger to public safety. So the DOJ sent the mayor a letter saying that might be unconstitutionally vague and that the DOJ is looking into it. Now, an interesting thing about this is that it's being investigated by the Civil Rights Division, the division that traditionally looked at racial bias in policing and police brutality. But in December, the DOJ announced the creation of a new Second Amendment section in that division, and that's who initiated this investigation.
Do you have any kind of a feel for how much of this is just tough talk from the administration? Like, didn't we see something similar with regards to the city being classified as a sanctuary city last year? Like, funding was threatened and nothing really happened, right?
That's correct. Pam Bondi, when she was AG, wrote a letter to the mayor demanding information about its immigration, the city's immigration policies. And then the city wrote back and nothing happened. Then last month, the GOP-led House Judiciary Committee wrote a similar letter. So far, no further action. So this could go that way, a shot across the bow. But it's hard to tell because it just happened this week.
And also, just to put a bow on it, City Council officially adopted the budget on Thursday. No surprises, right? We knew this was coming after the vote last week.
Yes. Well, there was one twist at the end. City Council signed on to a plan to make sure that the school district gets recurring annual funding. Council had rejected the mayor's Uber tax as a source of recurring funding to address the school district's structural budget deficit, but they increased the city contribution to the school district by $50 million, which is what the Uber tax roughly would have raised. The mayor said that's not the same thing. This is more than a one-time problem. We need to have it every year. And so, after talking with the council president, they stood with the superintendent and president of the school board and said, okay, we're agreed. There is going to be recurring funding in this amount every year. They didn't say how they would pull that off, but just before the budget vote today, 15 of the 17 city council members signed a pledge that they would find this money somehow.
All right. Thank you very much, Pat. KYW City Hall Bureau Chief Pat Loeb joining us. Time for a break. We'll have more of the week in Philly right after this. It's the week in Philly, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
We're going to get on a Zoom with our principals and tell them about Christmas in June.
We have not
identified the source of that revenue, but what we have committed to is ensuring that it happens.
Welcome back to The Week in Philly, and the school year in the Philadelphia School District came to a close on Thursday, so let's look back on that school year by bringing in KYW's Mike DiNardo. And Mike, interesting that on the final day, dozens of schools actually had to close early because of the heat.
Yeah, this would have been a virtual learning day at any other time of the year, but Thursday was the last day of school for students. So they had to go in and turn in their Chromebooks, right? So it was an early dismissal day on the last day of school for 52 Philadelphia schools that don't have adequate air conditioning.
Now, we will review the school year in a moment, but first off, I did want to talk about this. City Council officially passed its budget on Thursday. Now, this budget did not have the rideshare tax, which was designed, of course, to go towards fixing that structural budget deficit for the school district, but it sounds like they are finding other money. What's the situation?
Yeah, the question is where that money will come from. The mayor and the district said that the rideshare tax you talked about would have paid for 340 teachers, counselors, and climate staff at schools, and City Council rejected the rideshare tax, but instead included $50 million in one-time funds in the budget that it thought would have prevented the cuts. But Superintendent Tony Wadlington said the cuts would go ahead because that money was not recurring funding. He compared it to having the money for the first year of a five-year car loan, but no guarantee of money after that. So the mayor's and council's staffs got together in the past week, and late Wednesday, the mayor announced that the funding would be recurring and the cuts would be reversed.
We will be vetting every opportunity possible to generate that new predictable revenue.
And while they couldn't identify a revenue source right away, Matt, they said they would find the money somewhere in the five-year financial plan.
Well, we'll keep an eye on it. So when we look back at the 2025-2026 school year in Philadelphia, what would you say is the biggest story? Is it the facilities plan?
Of course, no doubt. It's a story that'll have an impact on every school community for the next decade, at least. 17 schools would close under the plan, 169 would be improved. Now, there are academic implications to this plan. How do you make sure that students at schools that are closing and the schools that are accepting those students don't suffer from the disruption? There are political implications as well. City council members opposed to the closings, especially in their own districts. They took a public stand against them, even attempting to shut down the school board vote that authorized those closures. So, yes, the facilities plan has to be the story of the year.
Now, you have talked to Superintendent Tony Wadlington on the regular during the year for your after school feature. How has he felt about how the school year has played out?
He will point to modest increases in test scores, attendance, and the graduation rate as signs of progress. He'll point to a Harvard-Stanford study showing Philadelphia is recovering faster from the pandemic learning losses than other urban districts. He acknowledges that the district has a long way to go. The majority of students are not reading or doing math at grade level, but Wadlington will point to these small signs as indications of progress, and he says he would give himself a grade of B for the job that he's done in the last year.
We will never get to an A until we attack the fact that the majority of our young people still don't perform at grade level in reading and or math.
And what changes should folks prepare for the next school year, the 2026-2027 year?
Wadlington promises intense support and counseling for students at the 17 closing schools to help them through the transition. He says in the next few weeks, he'll announce the leader of a transition team to help students and staff along. And of course, a year from now, we will be likely seeing the final graduation ceremonies at schools that are closing. Matt, we should also look for more details on when the district's two new year-round schools will open. They are still in the planning stages right now.
Now let's talk a little SEPTA. Of course, the World Cup getting started this weekend. Lots of attention on SEPTA. Does the transit agency feel it's ready?
As ready as it can be. This is something the city has known for years would be coming, right? SEPTA says that it has done two emergency drills with its staff to prepare for the possible World Cup emergencies. Everything from an unattended backpack to a parent who doesn't speak English losing a child in the crowd. As far as volume is concerned, SEPTA is adding extra train service on the B, the Broad Street line that runs to the link to NRG Station, or as FIFA calls it, Philadelphia Stadium, and there will be plenty of extra security throughout the system.
Now, what do you think is the biggest challenge they'll face? Is it simply a volume question in those bursts of leading up to the game and getting out of the game and how they respond to that?
I would think so. SEPTA expects 55,000 fans to use the Broad Street line to get to the matches and back. Those trains will run every 4 to 5 minutes, and Matt the Ride's home will be free thanks to a sponsorship, so that should help.
All right, Mike, thank you very much. That's KYW's Mike DiNardo joining us. We need to take another break, and we will be back with more of The Week in Philly from KYW News Radio right after this.
There's no amount of justice in this world that could bring her back. But at least we can say today we finally got our peace and our justice. Finally, we finally can put her to rest.
Welcome back to The Week in Philly, and this week, a jury in Philadelphia convicted Keith Gibson of the murder of four people, including his own mother. Now, this happened back in 2021, and for more, let's bring in KYW Crime and Justice reporter Kristen Johansson. Kristen, give us the story of what happened 5 years ago.
So 5 years ago, there were a series of murders in 2021. The first murder was of two men, Eric Flores and Roy Caban, who were found dead inside of the Al Medina Traders, the store that they worked on along Germantown Avenue. They were both found shot in the head. It looked that the store had been robbed. About 2 weeks after that, a woman named Christine Gibson was found dead, also shot in the head, also with a revolver, inside of a community center in East Falls. And then later, months later, in June of 2021, Christine Lugo was found shot dead in the head inside of a Dunkin' Donuts. She actually managed that store in North Philadelphia. I want to say kind of around that time, within a couple of days, they ended up arresting a man named Keith Gibson, who was at least a suspect at the time in Christine Gibson, his own mother's case. But they ended up arresting Keith Gibson with a gun, and that gun, the prosecutor said, matched basically three out of the four murders. And that's what he was on trial for. It was these four shooting deaths that he was on trial for. He had already been convicted in Delaware of two additional killings that happened, as well as other robberies, and was already sentenced to seven life sentences. After that trial, he was brought to Philadelphia to face these criminal charges, which also included, I should mention, robbery and gun offenses.
So how long did the jury deliberate and break down what exactly the verdict was?
It took about a day for them to deliberate. Actually, there was one point where we heard there was a verdict. The family comes in. Everybody's very nervous and everything. And then the clerk comes out and says, never mind, they're actually not done yet. And everyone's kind of deflated. You could see that the victims' families were very deflated. But then about 15 minutes later, they did come back with a verdict. They convicted him on all charges, which included four counts of first-degree murder, as well as robbery and gun offenses.
So you mentioned the multiple life sentences already in connection with the murders in Delaware. Has he been sentenced yet for these crimes?
Yes, he has been. So with first degree and actually second degree in Pennsylvania, it carries an automatic life sentence. So the judge heard victim impact statements right after this verdict was read. There were very heart-wrenching, tearful family members that told the judge about their loved ones, what they meant to this world, what they meant to them. They were deeply missed. Prosecutor Katie Wood, who had this case really all along, told the judge that these were good, everyday citizens.
These four individuals especially were hardworking individuals whose lives were taken just so senselessly.
Judge Giovanni Campbell actually tacked on an extra 38 to 76 years with those four life sentences for an additional convictions of those robbery and gun charges. And this, again, is in addition to those seven life sentences he's already facing in Delaware. So that's 11 life sentences in total, plus those additional decades. So prison is likely where Keith Gibson will die.
Now, you also had a story this week dealing with the funding of the Public Defender's Office. What's happening there?
So the chief public defender, Keisha Hudson, basically says she's infuriated with the mayor and the city council for flat funding her office during this budget cycle.
We have to now make the very hard decisions which are going to impact Black and brown clients who are poor in the city of Philadelphia.
Over the Kennedy administration, they got, you know, small increases incrementally, but they got basically an increase in total over 3 years of $15 million. With Mayor Parker, they say they've gotten about $1 million every year, but then this year they got flat funded, which means they get no extra funding. This office actually has about 500 members of staff and attorneys to pay, and that's in addition to the programs that they offer to help people basically become more valuable, hardworking members of society. The district attorney attorney's office got a significant bump in pay for and programs, and the defenders got nothing.
We are a critical part of the process, and to come out of this budget cycle as the only justice system agency that got no funding increase is remarkable to me, and it is infuriating to me.
I just have to mention, Matt, even seeing spending the last week in court, there were two homicide public defenders that were working this case. They investigate, they work incredibly hard to try and put on the best case that they can for their client, but they're also the check and balance system for the courts, the police, the prosecutors, and in sense, they make those entities better in many ways. They kind of check their work, right? Their detective work or the police work or even the prosecutor's work. So they're very important to the judicial process in general, and they very much feel like they've just been stiffed out of money.
So do we have any idea why this funding decision was made?
We have reached out to city council and to the mayor's office about this. Haven't heard anything back yet. They did, however, respond to other agencies who had holes in their budgets and had help finding them funds, but they haven't reached back out to us or to the public defender.
All right. Thank you very much, Kristen. That's KYW Crime and Justice reporter Kristen Johansson joining us. Still have a lot to get to on this edition of The Week in Philly. Don't go anywhere. The Week in Philly from KYW News Radio is sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers, proud sponsor of the KYW News Radio studios. Bring on the fun and bring home a new Honda with a great deal on your favorite Honda vehicles and finally take that road trip you've been dreaming of. Now's the time to check out the Honda Civic and HR-V from Honda, the 2025 Kelley Blue Book's KBB.com best value brand.
The reality in this country is that we are being bombarded every single day by a cocktail of chemicals that we did not consent to in our air, in our water, in the foods that we eat, and in so many products that come into close contact with our bodies. We must fight back.
This is The Week in Philly, and this week we saw a bill passed in the Pennsylvania House that would ban PFAS, or forever chemicals, from household products. For more, let's bring in KYW Suburban Bureau Chief Jim Melward. And Jim, before we get into the guts of the legislation, talk about what exactly kind of falls under the umbrella of these forever chemicals.
PFAS is a broad term that covers a large family of chemicals that have a lot of value in modern life because of their resistance to breaking down or degrading, things like semiconductor manufacturing, surgical equipment, hydraulic fluid and seals and wiring covers and airplanes. They gained notoriety, I guess, when high levels were found in drinking water supplies around military bases like the Willow Grove Naval Air Station, because PFAS was a major component of firefighting foam that was used during training. What make PFAS valuable, that resistance to breaking down, also make them an issue in the environment and in the human body. They've been linked to a list of serious medical issues, including cancer, liver problems, fertility issues, and birth defects. They've become popular in stain-resistant fabric, fireproofing, even in food service for non-stick baking or even food wrapping. And this particular bill from Montgomery County Democratic State Rep Greg Scott targets PFAS in the production of everyday items, including cosmetics, dental floss, menstrual supplies, and children's and infant items.
There's no reason for it. There are alternatives that manufacturers could use that don't raise the risk of cancer or reproductive harm and a whole host of significant other issues.
Republican Natalie Mihalik says while other countries regulate the use of PFAS in daily products, in the U.S., manufacturers say there's no proven connection to all those health issues.
It doesn't actually take a science background to believe that foreign chemicals floating around in our bodies until the day we die are harmless. And it doesn't end there. Moms are actually passing these chemicals onto their babies in the womb.
So what was the vote count for this? And I'm kind of curious, who's arguing in favor of the chemicals and what's the argument?
Well, the vote passed 188-13, clearly strong bipartisan support. The 13 members who voted against it did not voice their reasons for their negative votes. Typical opposition to this includes what I mentioned about the there's no definitive link. As we've heard so many times, we heard it from the cigarette companies. They say there's no definitive link to these health issues between PFAS and these health issues.
So it passes the House. What are the chances we see this get to Governor Josh Shapiro's desk?
I guess that'll be up to Republican leaders in the Pennsylvania Senate. Clearly, it had significant support from House Republicans, but the handful of GOP leaders in the Senate will decide if it comes up for a vote in that chamber.
Another story you covered this week, the Bucks County District Attorney making an announcement he was moving on big tech companies for failing to protect kids from online predators. What's the story here?
This is another one that's just been ignored at the federal level. And this is down to the county level with Bucks County DA Joe Kahn, who's been very outspoken about changing his DA's office from just a criminal prosecutorial body, if you will, and unleashing what he calls its power under PA's consumer protection laws. It expands a lawsuit that Kahn worked on while county solicitor 3 years ago that accused companies like YouTube, Snapchat, Facebook, and Instagram of driving youth mental health crisis. This adds Roblox, Meta, Discord, and X, with Kahn saying the amended complaint argues the added companies failed to protect children from online predators.
They have slashed and in some cases completely abandoned content moderation. As a result, our children are exposed to an endless barrage of pornography, hate speech, cyberbullying, and so-called revenge porn.
The amended suit was filed the same day a 32-year-old Bucks County man was sent to county prison for posing as a teen on the popular online gaming platform Roblox, where he connected with other teenagers, then convinced them to send him nude photos. It also came days before another Bucks County man was charged with using Elon Musk's AI, Grok, to make illicit images of children, which fall under child sexual abuse materials, what we used to call child pornography.
What is Kahn looking for in this lawsuit? Like, what would be a win?
Obviously, there's a financial component, but I guess the primary goal is first an admission that the company's alleged actions contribute to both mental health issues and exposure to online predators. And with that, a serious attempt, I guess, to address those concerns. But with all fairness to internet companies, we've seen over the past couple of decades, those fixes can be like nailing Jell-O to a wall.
So how much of this is wanting to draw attention to the issue, and how much of it is a legitimate shot to force change on these big tech companies? Because I look at this, you know, a county DA taking on these giant corporations, it really looks like a David Goliath situation.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. And having talked to Kahn, I would say it's a combination of both. He acknowledges these companies have legal power that can drag out and overwhelm most, if not all, plaintiffs.
In addition to this being a step forward towards getting justice, it is also going to continue to provide a blueprint for other district attorneys across Pennsylvania and perhaps across the country for how county governments can stand up for their people.
He hopes other counties and state attorneys general see it and join in the effort. Another challenge for Kahn is crime isn't going to take a break in Bucks County to let him attack this hill. And his office is still tasked with those investigations and prosecutors. Though when asked about that, he says he expects people who work in his office to be able to walk and chew gum.
All right. Thank you, Jim. KYW Suburban Bureau Chief Jim Melwert joining us. We've got more on this edition of The Week in Philly coming up right after this. We are coming down the stretch here on this edition of The Week in Philly, and the World Cup is underway. The first game here in Philly is this Sunday night. Now, a lot of people want to take in at least one of these games, and any event where there is high demand, you can bet scammers are not far behind. And for more on this, let's bring in KYW's Justin Udo. And Justin, you did a story this week about a particular type of scam causing problems for this World Cup. What is a ghost ticket sale?
A ghost ticket sale is when someone tells you they want to sell you a ticket to a game, to an event, to a concert, wherever it might be. They sell you that ticket, usually online. You give them the money. They give you something, but that something they give you is not a ticket. It's a ghost ticket. So what happens is you'll get that. You'll think that you have squared away your purchase, and you'll get to the gates and realize that that's not a ticket at all.
How prevalent is this? Are officials seeing a lot of these surrounding this World Cup specifically?
They are, Matt. And they say this makes up nearly 70% of the ticket sale frauds that they're seeing for World Cup games.
So how can you avoid falling victim to this? If it's this prevalent, everyone that is thinking about or going to a game has to be on guard.
That's right. Yeah, I was talking to Legal Shield attorney Ben Farrow earlier this week, and he tells me there are a number of things people can do when it comes to avoid being a victim of one of these scams. He says the first and probably the easiest, the one that most of us would do if we could, would be to know the seller, know the person you're buying it from, know that if it's a coworker or a friend, someone that you trust. But as we know online, you don't know most folks. So that's a risk that people are taking.
Any of those social media sites? complaints, you don't know who you're talking to. If it just smells too good or the seats are too good, don't do it.
He said number two is use a credit card. They have fraud prevention and they can cover you if you've been defrauded out of your money for a ticket. And he says another third thing to do is avoid social media when it comes to purchasing tickets and use a reputable third party vendor that might have the tickets instead.
Now, if you do get scammed, what are your options? I mean, a lot of these people are getting right to the gate of a game and being turned away, right?
That's absolutely right. Yeah, if people are scammed, there's two big things you can do. One is why you should always purchase with a credit card, because they have that fraud protection prevention that you won't be on the hook for all of those hundreds, if not thousands of dollars. Another thing is contact your attorney general. He says sometimes the attorney general, they won't be able to get your money back for you exactly, but they can start to hunt down these bad actors and eventually hold them accountable. And the third thing that you were talking about was when it comes to people not knowing when they get to the gate. And he said their data shows 36% of victims do not realize they've purchased one of these ghost tickets until they get to the gate. So you really just have to do your due diligence ahead of time so you're not getting to the gate and getting bummed out because of what's going on with these sales.
All right, I'll tell you what, I might be overly cynical, but boy, it feels like we are living through a golden age of scams and grifts, doesn't it?
You know, there's just so much more accessibility to us for people that are fraudsters to contact us in so many different ways, whether it's an email, whether it's on ticket sales. You just have to really be vigilant, and it's don't trust anything online, and you know, double, triple, if not quadruple check.
All right. Thank you very much, Justin. That's KYW's Justin Udo joining us. And that is going to do it for this edition of The Week in Philly from KYW News Radio, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. This week's episode was produced by Sabrina Boyd Circa and Brian Seltzer. My name is Matt Leon. Thanks so much for listening and enjoy the rest of your weekend.